You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 6th of December 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at A World in Transition, the title of a UBS report looking to the year and years ahead, whether in terms of portfolio balancing, asset class allocation or global social and economic trends. We'll consider all the implications for anyone interested in the long-term investment horizon. To begin, why call the report World in Transition? Well, look to China, or to emerging markets, or to developed markets alike, and it makes perfect sense, explains Kiran Ganesh, UBS cross-asset strategist.
We've come up with this sort of concept because of really the number of changes and transitions taking place in the world at the moment, and that spans wherever you look and at almost every aspect of economics and politics today. Specifically, you can look at China and its transition away from being a producer of goods to a consumer of goods, and all of the bumps along the road that that's going to cause. You can look in the emerging markets, and we saw just recently how Brazil is in a really severe recession as it attempts to both transition its political system, but also transition away from its dependence on commodities, which have obviously suffered a lot. And then we can look to some of the developed markets too, and in the places like the US, and we're likely getting closer to the time when we're likely to see a reduced dependence on loose monetary policy, and we start to see higher interest rates. And then in Europe too, obviously the geopolitical instances taking place in Syria are obviously starting to have a very meaningful impact in Europe as well. So it's really a world in transition, which is full of uncertainty. We're likely to see volatility continue in financial markets and going forward as a result of all of that.
Mark Hafley, the Global Chief Investment Officer at UBS Wealth Management, suggests looking to central banks, amongst other cues.
Well, I think one of the key transitions that we're going to see in 2016 is this handoff from the Federal Reserve to Mario Draghi as the source of liquidity should there be bumps along the road in 2016, because now the Fed has moved to a tightening bias and we've seen further quantitative easing from Mario Draghi.
Mads Petersen, head of global asset allocation for the wealth management division in UBS, explains why we're a world in transition.
It makes sense for us as we describe what we're seeing as the primary trends driving the world and driving the way people should position their investments. As the world transitions are very difficult to predict the outcome of, and therefore our key message is to diversify your expected returns across as many drivers as possible, because this world where the transition is moving in stages is one which will throw up larger and smaller surprises, which if you bet everything on very few things, you risk to be thrown off course for your long-term investments. In more specific terms, it's a world where we transition from a strongly industrial base in, for example, China, into more service base, and we have the same in the Western world where we currently see strong service sectors, not very strong manufacturing. We have the same in central bank policy where we see a transition from accommodative policy to for probably a situation where we will have less accommodative policy from the Federal Reserve. So we're transitioning on a number of areas, and we are trying to lay out how people navigate that in the report in terms of their investments.
And Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, explains why the title makes perfect sense to him.
We're obviously relatively far into the current bull market for both risk assets and frankly, fixed income. 7 years from a major crisis, and the largest crisis any of us have seen since the Great Depression. And in that environment, you know, we're still working through some of the deleveraging, some of the inefficiency, some of the systematic and systemic issues which arose then. So looking forward, you know, when we were thinking about how markets and asset classes will perform over the next 5 to 7 years, you know, we actually have a relatively conservative or muted outlook, particularly on a risk-adjusted basis. And in fact, if you look across all of the traditional asset classes, our assumptions for the next 5 years in terms of risk-adjusted return are poorer than they were for the preceding 5 years. In fact, the best-performing traditional asset classes are expected to be US equities, UK equities, Australian equities, and emerging market hard currency sovereign debt. In each case, they're expected only to return a Sharpe ratio in the order of 0.4. Where we see more opportunity, though, at this stage of the cycle is in alternatives. And there, the absolute and also risk-adjusted returns we're expecting from things like private equity, from private debt, and hedge funds are significantly higher than for the traditional asset classes.
Good strategists and analysts focus on the long-term investment horizon for obvious reasons. Think the need to hold a diversified portfolio to rebalance and to maximise returns in the face of volatility. What are some of the key longer-term trends that inform this, in Kiran Ganesh's view?
I guess we look at things two ways. I mean, the first is, how do all those trends influence and the likely returns from different asset classes? And that's also obviously influenced by the performance we've seen so far. So the relatively strong run for equities in recent years, particularly the very low level of interest rates present across the world, and does mean that the forward-looking returns for most asset classes are likely to be lower than they were in the past. And obviously, you know, when we're looking at global growth, you know, when we say it'll accelerate in the coming years, it's to a pretty low level. So just to give some color, and we're looking for an acceleration to 3.4% next year at a global level. And that's exactly the same level of growth we've had actually for four out of the past 5 years. So it's, you know, a pretty mediocre kind of level of growth that we've got, and we're likely to get pretty mediocre returns from different asset classes.
What are Mark Hayfley's preoccupations in terms of long-term trends that inform the report and wider strategy at UBS?
We had so much to say this year. We put out a year-ahead report looking at our more tactical views for 2016 and also the years ahead, looking at how you should invest for the longer term to seek some of these longer-term opportunities that come about from this year or this world in transition. For example, world population is supposed to be 10 billion by 2050. And we know that that population is increasingly going to be in the emerging markets. We know that global population is aging. So how do we invest today to take advantage of some of these trends which we know are going to be in place?
When it comes to key longer-term trends, in Mads Petersen's view, healthcare, in particular oncology, is of particular interest.
In terms of the individual trends, we see a strong trend in specific areas of the healthcare sector, for example, where we think in the areas of oncology, there is a good, very, very long-term trend. So for people who can lock up their money for a substantial amount of time, there is an interesting transition going on in the healthcare sector where you can be invested, do something for the world at the same time as you do something for specifically for the oncology area and invest in that area probably in a profitable way. The same we have for a number of other long-term themes. In terms of how you construct portfolios, we are also debating in the publication different new ways of constructing portfolios where you can either take a more quantitative approach to it and try to predict market regime changes. We are offering solutions in that area, or you can move more towards an endowment style of investing where you have larger allocations to alternative areas of hedge funds, private equity and private debt, and try to move towards what is known from the large university endowments, primarily in the United States, and invest along the same line of those, because that has proven over time. So when we talk about time here, we talk about decades and generation, a very good way of getting real returns. So there's one trend in the portfolio construction, and there's also trends in the long-term themes where we like these ideas.
Simon Smiles, too, talks about cancer drugs and treatments when we asked him about some of the key longer-term trends.
I think in the world that we see panning out over the next 5 years, where the returns at an aggregate level with respect to regional equity markets and traditional sub-asset classes are more muted, where we think additional value will be derived within portfolios is actually playing some of these longer-term structural investment themes. So investments which benefit from structural trends like demographics, urbanisation, immutable trends, if you will. And there are a number of those that we highlight in our Years Ahead document. Amongst those is oncology, the investing in curing cancer. And there you have a dire need, ever-increasing amounts or ever-increasing, unfortunately, deaths from cancer. One in two men are expected to contract cancer, one in three women. This is an epidemic. The good news, though, is the science is evolving And it's evolved to the point where we're now on the cusp of being able to not just cure cancer, but cure cancers. You combine that with a very favourable regulatory environment, record speed with which drugs are being approved. We think there's very interesting investment opportunities, particularly in the earlier stages, taking academic research through proof of concept, first stage trials. There, it also plays into our preference for alternative investments. You know, it's paid through venture capital, through private equity, earning investors an additional illiquidity premium.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at portfolio models and we'll mull some of the other critical questions for the year and years ahead. We look at portfolios for the year and years ahead next. What are some of the key considerations? We start with Mads Petersen.
So one of the key is it's important to be invested. For many years, people were used to harvesting some yield on their cash. That's not the case anymore. People were also used to, if you were conservative, you could be in bonds and it could be pretty profitable. There's not so much yield left in the bonds, so you need to take some risk in terms of equities, hedge funds. You need to have maybe some credit risk. But to do that without being too nervous, you need to offset it by having high-grade bonds. So it's very important to have a more diversified portfolio approach than the traditional one where people might have been 50% cash, 50% equities, or if you were conservative, you would be 50% cash, 50% government bonds. That's not going to work in the future, at least not if you want to get a return which is above inflation and real growth.
We also asked Kiran Ganesh to share some insights on the portfolio side.
The likely returns on mainstream asset classes are likely to be relatively low. So it means that a traditional asset allocation approach, whilst still having merits as we look forward in terms of trying to maximise returns versus risk, is likely to see lower returns than it has in the past 5 years, for example. So some of the things that we've looked to do in the years ahead is look at some different approaches of constructing asset allocations, trying to learn from some of the most successful institutional investors and apply those techniques for use by private investors. So looking at things like how do endowments manage their money so successfully, places like Yale and Harvard have experienced returns in excess of most asset classes in recent years. How have they achieved that and how can we apply that in the private investor space? Similarly, how do different hedge funds manage their downside risk? Hedge funds are usually relatively good at protecting against sharp drawdowns. Again, we try to learn from some of their more sophisticated techniques and find ways in which private investors can employ those too. So it is a world where normal asset allocations are likely to have lower returns than they've had recently. So we're always exploring new ways of approaching things, and we've tried to bring some of those over in the years ahead.
What are the key considerations when it comes to tailoring portfolios to the individual? Simon Smiles takes up the story.
When we look across our advisory client base, there are distinct differences between clients in different regions and between different types of clients. However, there are also some similarities. The first similarity is home bias. Clients tend to invest a lot more in the assets of their home country, assets they feel more familiar with. Clients tend to have much larger cash allocations than we would recommend, and in fact, than we invest on behalf of clients on a discretionary basis. And our advisory clients tend to have very low allocations to alternative investments. Now, in a world as we move forward where we think alternative investments will do particularly well, where cash will actually not even retain its real value, and where geographic diversification is going to be increasingly important, that obviously presents a significant problem. So being able to take a large document, 107 pages of investment views, and distill that down to the critical messages that an individual client needs to understand the inefficiencies within their portfolio and the need to move to a more optimally allocated portfolio, is ever more critical.
Simon Smiles there, discussing tailoring for individuals. Featured in the new UBS report is a new filter, the My House View feature. Kiran Ganesh explains what this offers.
We've been always trying to make sure that the research we deliver is relevant to the people reading it as possible. And the tricky thing that we face is that research is always only going to be relevant to you if we know what the assets that are held are. So what we've tried to develop is something whereby Users can input a little bit of information about what their current portfolio holdings are. So, for example, what is the allocation to cash, equities, bonds, and commodities? And with that bit of information, we can use the filter to basically compare the asset allocation to the suggested sort of UBS house view and portfolio, and also search through all of the content that we put together in the year ahead and the years ahead, and really deliver the most relevant pieces. So just to give a concrete example, we've got loads of interesting pieces in the years ahead about the importance of diversifying across asset classes. Now, for a investor who's not very well diversified, those are really relevant for them to read. For somebody who's already diversified across many, many asset classes, they probably don't need to read it. So what we try to do is to look at the portfolio that's entered and understand a bit of the kind of dynamics going on there, and then pull out some of the most relevant content from our publications to direct to the user.
Finally this week, we asked Mark Hafley if there were any other critical questions for 2016 and beyond.
There's still reason to be positive about global growth in 2016 improving, and that it can still be a year where risk assets can improve. But as we learned from the second half of 2015, it's likely to be volatile around questions about growth, say, out of China, questions out of continued central bank stimulus, and questions around geopolitics, as we see many regions of the world a bit more unstable than they looked perhaps at the start of 2015.
And that's Mark Hafley bringing us to the end of this 61st edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.